Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. I am up tracking a gigantic bull elk, or at least that's the story I'm going with for the week. What follows is an episode that first aired on September 30th. It's an interview with author of the book Fauci's Fiction, Michael J. Schwartz. Enjoy this replay, and I'll be back on Saturday for Weekend Update. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to another exhilarating installment of Weekend Update. From very high above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy Saturday. It's been a really long time since I've talked about COVID on the program. And the reason for it is, frankly, I got sick of all the bullcrap that the media was telling you about it. Now, it's almost like the thing never existed at all. Well, you might hear a story every now and again. Well, there's a new variant coming out, Zebra, and it's going to kill the whole planet. But of course, nobody pays any attention to it because we all know that it's bullcrap. Of course, I'm not saying that the virus itself is bullcrap. What I am saying, however, is that you're not going to die from it. In fact, the symptoms you would probably get, even if you contracted it, are nothing more severe than the normal cold. And yet, there are still people that think they have to get their 27th booster and will drive around town while wearing their mask, thinking that they're protecting themselves. If you remember correctly, Governor Gordon issued the mask mandate, and I think in most places, at least in Buffalo, Wyoming, that lasted all of 1 week. Because, of course, most people that live in Wyoming have a brain. We knew that masks weren't going to do anything to prevent a very, very, very small virus from infecting us. And even if it did, none of us are going to be told by the government what to wear, much less that we're actually going to put a diaper on our face that doesn't do a darn thing for us. With COVID, there's a lot of reflection that we all should do. All of us voluntarily locked ourselves away in our homes for what started out as 15 days to stop the spread and turned into, in some cases, months. There are still commercials on TV that say, "Get the vaccine, stop the spread." All of them are ridiculous. There's no more reason to get a 27th booster than there is to wear a hat on a Tuesday. Both of them are equally arbitrary. It's fair to say that by now, all of us know somebody that is fully vaccinated and yet still contracted COVID-19. The venerable Anthony Fauci got it a couple times himself. And out of all the people that you would expect not to get the virus, it would have been Anthony Fauci. This is the guy that would go to Nationals games and wear three masks. Because it's completely logical that if one mask didn't work, putting another one on top of it would do the trick. At the time it happened, any thinking person would have said, "That's just bizarre." Looking back on it, it's absolutely laughable. And at this point, most of us have a pretty good handle on how to avoid getting the virus. Wash your hands every now and again, and don't be around sick people. Strange that it's the same advice that you would use for any other type of virus, like the flu. We might say that that's common sense. But there again, that's just one more thing that doesn't apply to COVID-19. But everything that you and I know about COVID is all anecdotal. It comes from our own experience. We watched some of the people that we know get COVID, get sick, and then recover. We know that if we wash our hands, there's a higher likelihood that we won't get sick. And again, it's really no different than any other bug that's floating around. But one thing that you and I are probably unable to do is to get data to back up what we already know about COVID-19. Well, there's a new book out called Fauci's Fiction, written by Michael J. Schwartz. Michael J. Schwartz was one of the first people to start testing for COVID-19 in New Jersey and in the country for that matter. And he's collected a tremendous amount of data. It's a great book, super easy to read. I think I finished it in a couple of quick settings. And we're going to talk to the author in just a second. But first, I want to read you a passage out of the end of the book. Remember when someone sneezed in an airport and everybody would turn around to stare at the offender as if to say, "Why are you trying to kill us, you jerk?" The pandemic turned a nation of good people into a bunch of scared, mind-numbed, paranoid terminators. It was neighbor against neighbor out in the trenches. If you were standing too close to someone, you might get yelled at for encroaching on the 6-foot zone. If your face mask fell under your nose when you fell asleep on a flight, you'd be woken up by a team of flight attendants. Some people were even arrested for surfing on the ocean. Is this really what our society turns into when chaos befalls us? End quote. Yes, that's exactly what happened with COVID-19. For a nation that prides itself on data and being the first to find out something about everything, we turned into a bunch of idiots. And we listened to a bunch of idiots on TV and then lived our lives accordingly. And we all did it without any proof whatsoever. Well, the guy we're going to talk to in just a second has all of that proof. Proof, that is, that the government lied to us over and over. This portion of the program is brought to you by New Trend Hats. They've got a wide selection of hats for both men and women, and you're sure to find one that'll keep the top of your head and your ears nice and toasty warm. So go to newtrendhats.com. Well, hold on a minute. Don't do that right now. Listen to the program and then go get you a new hat. Michael Schwartz is the author of the new book, Fauci's Fiction. I had a chance to sit down and talk with him, and it's a great discussion. Here it is. Joining me via Zoom is author of the book, Fauci's Fiction, Michael J. Schwartz. Michael, welcome to Cowboy State Politics.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I guess we'll start the same place I start all of discussions. Why don't you just tell my listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I've been in business for 30 years, done a multitude of things in my life. I currently own 3 medical clinics. That's kind of where Fauci's Fiction was born. We were the first company in New Jersey to do a COVID test, and I have clinics in New Jersey and Florida. Saw patients from all around the world. But we did 44,000 tests and over 19,000 patients. And like I said, Fauci's Fiction was born. But beyond that, I've done quite a bit in my life. I used to be a police officer, private pilot. I do some stand-up comedy. But I've been in business for 30 years and spent a lot of that time in the medical industry.
So tell me about the book. How did it start? I mean, I know that you said that you have a tremendous amount of data on COVID testing. Finally, when did you decide to sit down and write a book? I mean, there's so many narratives surrounding COVID-19 that I'm sure lots of people could write books. Well, what was your reason?
Well, I guess it was after 1,000 different conversations with 1,000 patients and everything that's in the book we've been talking about for 3 years. It's funny when folks come to me and say, "Hey, you know, hindsight's 2020." I said, "Nope, I've done long form interviews on podcasts that are over 2 years old where we've talked about exactly what's in the book." But it was trying to educate all of our patients one by one, to talk to them about how masks work, vaccines. I mean, I get questions on vaccines still every day. Especially now that they're pushing this new booster. But it was about, you know, a couple hundred conversations in when enough patients said to me, "You should write a book," and the seed was planted. And then, of course, you know, you're busy doing what you're doing every day. It took me quite a while to finally sit down and actually write the words introduction and then chapter one. My dad passed away in the middle of writing the book, so that kind of put a wrench in it. Always wanted to write this a little bit earlier just so that folks could have the real data on COVID and not have to answer so many questions. But I guess, you know, sooner the better, but you know, none too late, because I still get the same questions every day. And it seems like folks are still very, very confused in regards to what COVID really is.
I think one of the most poignant parts of your book, perhaps the most poignant sentence, is had this book been done, certainly your dad may not have passed away and definitely a lot of other people wouldn't have. If you could sum it up for me, why is that?
Well, we knew what we knew very early on. As I said, we were the first company to start testing. So it only took us about 2 months of testing, maybe not even that, to realize that the trends that what you were hearing on TV and from the government weren't exactly matching the trends that we saw on the ground. Folks were not dying from this like everyone talked about. You know, you're hearing stories of doom and gloom from folks at the hospital or news outlets from Italy and Germany. Meanwhile, 90% of my patients were asymptomatic or mild, and there's a lot of reasons for that. We can get into that later. Folks weren't really dying of this. The folks that were sick had co-infections, which we were catching at a very early at a very early time frame when no one was talking about co-infection. And you know, I think not just saving people's lives in terms of folks like my dad knowing about the vaccine, but saving people's lives in terms of living their life and the suicide rates going up, kids out of school for so long. We didn't have to run through the exercise that we ran through with COVID if this data was just getting out there. And folks like, you know, folks from the government and the media were definitely censoring that and still are today.
I think for me, one of the most shocking results of COVID, and you kind of alluded to it, is I guess I would call it the neurosis that was created. There's this guy that lives above me in the apartment building. Every morning at 6, he gets up to go walk his dog. Now, I live right by a very large park. Buffalo, Wyoming is, I mean, it's right next to the mountains, and there's not a lot of people that live there. So there is nobody within 300 yards of this guy at 6 a.m. in the morning. And yet, still to this day, he walks out of that building with a mask on. Now, it just absolutely blows my mind. Still to this day, when I talk to people, it's one of two conversations. It's either masks or it's vaccines. So let's just start with masks. Now, when this whole COVID thing started, nobody really knew a lot about it. My dad, being a scientist, he's actually a wildlife biologist, but I mean, scientist. We were all bored, and so he figured out what the size of the COVID virus was, and then the tightest knit woven mask that he could come up with, how big an opening was on there. And in your book, you talk a lot about the ineffectiveness of masks. I was wondering if you could just kind of give us the short version of why masks don't work and why it's why people that drive around with a mask on are kind of dumb.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack here, and I know you want me to give the short version, but the wearing a mask for a virus is the second dumbest thing I've ever seen in my lifetime. And you gotta understand, we have to be specific about what type of mask we're talking about. And I get into that in the book a little bit about flying on planes. They just required you to wear a face covering on a plane. It wasn't specifically an N95 mask that was properly fitted, which is where you're going to get your best protection. If you put that in context, when you go to the hospital and you work there, and an infectious disease nurse has to fit you with a properly fitted N95 mask. And if it doesn't fit properly, they put you in something that looks like a spacesuit. It's called the Papper mask. We have to be very specific when we talk to the public, and I think educating them becomes very important here. The ones we're probably in most people's minds are those blue surgical masks. They're not fitted to your face. They're just very loosely fit on there. The particle size of COVID is 0.1 micron. But the filter on that blue surgical mask is 3 microns. So it's 30 times too large for the particle. The problem is, and I try to explain this for people, and it's hard to do over podcasts, it's not video, but I would demonstrate this for my patients with my vape pen. You are breathing through the path of least resistance. And folks would say, well, aren't you getting some protection? If you understand particle size and that anything smaller than 0.25 microns does not settle by gravity, it literally floats around in the air. And if you look at Dr. Baruba's study from MIT, the spread on someone just breathing in a room was 27.2 feet. It only takes one live particle to infect you with COVID. So when you are walking around in a sea of millions and billions of live particles, that mask is giving you zero protection, but it's actually doing something worse. It's trapping bacteria and it's breeding an environment of moisture, which is why most of the folks that would come back wearing these all the time would have a staph infection or Klebsiella pneumonia or H flu. The mask was actually more detrimental than most people were led on to believe.
Well, like I say, I mean, it's again, I go out to the store and you'll drive by people and they're still wearing a mask, and it's the most ridiculous thing that I've ever seen. You spend a lot of time in your book talking about the early days of COVID testing. And one of the things that struck me is it sounded like you were alone by yourself going from house to house. Could you just reiterate for my listeners what that experience was like, how you got started?
Yeah, it was kind of surreal. You know, I mean, the world was shut down. I live in New Jersey for the most part. I'm in Florida right now at my other place. But in New Jersey, our governor shut down completely. So the cops weren't even pulling people over on the road. I'm doing 100 miles an hour on the major highways there, getting back and forth from house to house. And I did not have a lot of testing supplies. The only reason we had them in the first place was because we practice good medicine and we do something called a respiratory pathogen panel. So my patients knew what COVID swabs were long before the public did, because if you had come to me 5 years ago and you were sick, we'd swab you. So I had enough of these supplies. One of the labs that I work with was one of the first 30 in the nation to get FDA approval to do COVID testing. And I was a man on an island, I guess. My staff kind of, you know, all went in different directions. Their families were scared that they were going to catch this thing they saw on TV and everybody was going to die from it. And so it was hard to find staff. All of my clients in the beginning that we had lined up for wellness exams had canceled as the world shut down. And we said, hey, we could offer COVID testing, when one of the labs we work with said we can roll this out on March 16th of 2020. So I was going from house to house to house and I'm taking precautions. I put on PPE. I would test people on their porches. It was very surreal being in a world where everything was shut down. I felt like I was the only one left on the planet until I got home. But you would find out that, you know, when you would test an entire household, one sick person, as a courtesy, we would test everybody else in the house. You would find that everybody had it 100% of the time. So every single household, no matter who you went to, and I did 441, 100% of the time, every single person in the house had it, but 85 to 90% of those people were asymptomatic, did not have a symptom, or it was very mild. Maybe it was a headache or something of that nature. So you realized early on that, hey, not everybody has this thing. Not everybody's sick from it. You got to remember, I'm calling every sick patient personally every single night to tell them, hey, you're positive, record their symptomology, and even call them in subsequent days to find out how they're doing and to see if they developed any symptoms. So we learned very early on that this was not, again, what they were saying on television every day. And we were trying to get that narrative out, but nobody would listen.
I want to play a piece of sound for you. And I mean, it's of a Wyoming broadcast talking about infections and deaths, and the fascinating thing in this soundbite is they show a picture of Mark Gordon talking, Wyoming's governor. He's up there the whole time, and he's got this face covering around his neck, and the whole time he's pulling it up over his nose. And you know, Wyoming's a small state, and many of us know the governor personally in some cases, and like every interview that guy gave, he had that dumb face covering on. And a friend of mine joked that our governor's a rancher, and a friend of mine joked that his new brand is the Masked W. But let me play the sound for you and get you to respond.
Over in Wyoming, Governor Mark Gordon has tested positive for COVID-19. Gordon's office says he has minor symptoms, plans to continue working remotely as he recovers from the virus. The announcement comes on the same day Wyoming legislators announced they would delay the bulk of the 2021 legislative session until the spring. Well, this news as COVID-19 cases also continue to climb at a fast pace in the Cowboy State. The state now has more than 26,000 positive cases and 200 deaths. Natrona County is the hotspot right now with close to 4,000 cases.
What's the significance of those? I mean, as far as your book is concerned, what's the significance of those two numbers, the cases versus deaths?
Well, we predicted the death rate of this would come down to that of the flu, and it has. We predicted that probably within the first 2 months. We were running regression analysis charts and looking at our data saying this is, again, you know, not what you're hearing on TV. And, you know, my reaction to that is, why is that even news? You know, we're talking about everybody's going to get COVID. Most people get it and never know they have it. And all of a sudden it's news, just like it was news when the vaccines came out and they were talking about breakthrough cases on the air. That wasn't news to us. We never used the word breakthrough in our office because we told our patients before the vaccines came out that you can catch this, you can give it. You're going to need multiple shots. It's going to work like a flu shot. We discussed this with our immunologist just about every single day. I firmly believe, and I've said this on a lot of television interviews, I don't think COVID would have been COVID if it wasn't happening during an election year. And I don't get into political narratives in my book, but it's quite obvious as you see this, and we're sitting at home listening to the media talk about these things, stories just like that, saying, why? What's the significance of this? It's ridiculous. You know, when you do this every day for a living, it just became obvious that everyone was going to get it. Most people weren't going to die from it. The ones that did, a lot of times they died with it. Not saying that COVID is nothing. COVID is very real, but COVID is just as very real as RSV or influenza A. There's death rates from those. If you're in the pool of population that's going to die in the next 5 years, a cold can bring you down, a flu can bring you down, COVID can bring you down. There's things you can do to mitigate these things. But those are not the things that were being talked about on the news. Incubation periods, how long a virus can sustain in your system. There's so much stupidity that continues to propagate even today, 3 years into this. It just baffles my mind. I had a guy call me yesterday and he's got COVID, wanted to know when he can come in for a retest to test negative. And I had explained to him, you don't go to the doctor when you have the flu and ask him when you're over the flu. There is no need for a negative test. You can test positive for up to 90 days and you're just shedding dead cells. And to me, it just drives me nuts, because when you think about what we put our country through, that we were dealing with the most deadly thing known to man and everyone might die if we don't comply with all the nonsense, everyone should be on the same exact page. And that's part of the book. You know, we still speak a very different language when it comes to COVID or even respiratory pathogens. And we learned a lot from the mass testing that we did. But everybody is still back in 2020 trying to figure out how to mitigate this when all the information is right there in front of you. And that's what Fauci's fiction is about.
Well, and I think another thing that makes your book very different from others is that it's data driven. I mean, you've written it in kind of a narrative form, a story form, so that it's easy to read. But it's pretty clear when you go through it that all of the claims that you make are backed up by data. One more question on that, and then I'd like to move on to vaccines. Did you start out with the decision, hey, I'm going to collect as much data as possible? Or was it just, you know, we're here, we should get it? Or, I mean, tell me what that decision process was.
I mean, I'm a curious guy. I got 160 IQ. I like to kind of figure things out. I'm the guy that will take something apart and try to figure out how it works. And when everybody's look, as you start to notice things within the first week or two, you start to say, well, you know, this might make sense to record this because it might add to the benefit. I might be able to help my patients, but beyond my patients, folks in the rest of the country and the rest of the world understand this in total. And I really figured, I mean, I honestly, I had a friend of mine call me and say, hey, how long do you think this is going to last? And I said, 6 months at tops, because, you know, if they're seeing what I'm seeing, they'll figure it out. We're not going to, the lockdowns will end. We'll get back to business. We can't shut down the world for this long. And I don't think either of us could believe that it went on for as long as it did. You start to realize there's a narrative there, but a recording of data really puts it in perspective. When you can see it every day, the way we saw it from a 30,000 foot view, COVID looks very, very different. But as I explained to folks, and I know you want to get into vaccines, there's a lot more to COVID than just negative or positive. You're either negative or you're positive with caveats. And understanding that in totality will let you take that mask off in your car. It'll let you go back to living your life. And I think that was what we wanted to do. We wanted to keep our patients safe. And if it was as deadly as they were saying, our narrative might have been a little bit different. But when you see the opposite of what, you know, is on the news every day, you do your damnedest to try to inform everybody so that we don't shut down the world and cause suicide rates to go up. But it didn't quite happen the way we thought it was going to happen.
Well, and the White House and the media, I mean, neither of them helped, because the only thing all of us kept hearing is follow the science. And anybody with an IQ over 100 knew that what they were doing was not scientific at all. And especially when it comes to viruses, I mean, when viruses mutate, they don't become stronger, they become weaker so that they can continue to propagate. And the whole thing was just from the very beginning. Of course, I didn't have much to do. I would just sit at home and listen to the next thing that came over the TV. And I just kept thinking to myself, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. So let's talk about vaccines. Early on in the pandemic, I interviewed a guy named Dr. David Earl Grafe. The guy had a resume that's 8 pages long, and not resumes like most people have. Most people pad their resume and try to make it longer. This guy, every single line on this thing for 8 pages was some significant place that he worked. The last place on his resume was director of protocol at George Washington University. So, in other words, this is the guy that monitored the development of new drugs, specifically clinical trials. And one of the phrases that was used and I didn't see this in the book, but I want to ask you about it anyway. One of the phrases that they used repeatedly was safe and effective. According to this guy, that's the term that's used to describe medications that have gone through clinical trials. So in your book, you do allude to the fact that there was all of these different things that were happening after people took the vaccine. Could you talk to me a little bit about that? I mean, you spend a great deal of time on it in the book.
Sure. Well, vaccines aren't all the same. I can't stand when I talk to somebody now, especially when they're on the left, and you talk about this, the first thing they'll say is, well, you're anti-vax. And that's not true. I mean, I had a Hep B vaccine a couple of years ago. I've been vaccinated all my life. But most of the vaccines that I've gotten, you've gotten, have been attenuated vaccines or viral vector vaccines, technology that's worked. This is brand new technology. This is mRNA. They were rushed through clinical trials. The data has been sealed up for 75 years. And I want to be very clear. I did not recommend a vaccine for my patients because we thought there would be issues from the vaccine. I didn't recommend vaccines because we knew they didn't work. As you're calling patients, you have to understand my perspective is very, very different than everybody else. I'm not getting my information by watching the news. I'm getting my information by talking to my patient base every single day. So as the vaccines rolled out, as I'm calling those positive patients every night, the narrative changed. In the first couple of months of COVID, it was, I don't understand how I got COVID. I've been wearing a mask the whole time. And you kind of laugh a little bit. And then as the vaccines came out, it was one after the other after the other. I don't understand how I have COVID. I've been fully vaccinated. And you would record that. You would ask the patient, when did you receive your vaccines? What type of vaccine did you get? And across the board, it was every single vaccine that was failing. So we didn't use the word breakthrough case because we knew it broke through the vaccine right away. Vaccines work in very different ways, but when you and I talk about this in the book as well, it's irresponsible to use the word vaccine to someone who's 80, 70, 90 years old because they think in their mind long-term immunity like polio or like Hep B. You can't just change the definition and change the game in the middle, the rules of the game, and expect people that, you know, are the smart people, at least with an IQ of over 100, to not catch that. Those folks that were surprised that they got COVID when they were fully vaccinated, we had told our patients early on. I had a conversation with my immunologist before the vaccines came out. And I said, look, the efficacy of the flu vaccines are about 30 to 40%. I said, as the virus continues to mutate, it's spike protein that mutates, not the inside of the capsule of the virus. I said, don't you expect after a couple of years, maybe even a couple of months, because this thing has such a high R-naught, that the efficacy of the COVID vaccines may be as little as 30 to 40%. And he said, that's a great hypothesis. So we test these hypotheses in theory, and then you test them in practice and you see what's coming through. But again, I didn't not recommend it because I thought there'd be joint issues or myocarditis or pericarditis, some of the things we see now. I could talk about the abundance of cancers. We didn't recommend it because it didn't work. So why would I recommend a experimental vaccine that's going to go in your arm that I don't know what's going to do because it's new technology for something that's not going to give you any protection? It just makes no sense scientifically. So when you have those folks out there yelling, follow the science, they were way far off because we were doing this every day. We were actually writing the book on the science of COVID, but there was obviously a different narrative that was leading people down a different, very different path.
We'll get back to the program in just a second. But first, a completely outrageous profit timeout. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you're in the market for any type of building, be it a garage or a barn or a roping arena so you can do all that rodeo stuff here in like 2 months, or maybe you need a giant warehouse for your business, the two guys you need to talk to are Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings. They're the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do a much better job. So give Nick and Jesse a call. Their phone number is 307-674-2532. Trust me, they're the first guys you need to talk to. Again, their phone number is 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. It's Saturday morning, and do you know what I think about every Saturday morning when I wake up? Well, first thing I think about is coffee. Then I think about hot wings. Hot wings from the Wing It food truck. They make the most incredible wings in the state of Wyoming. I personally recommend the garlic parmesan wings. They're incredible. And it's not just those. I mean, they have this sweet habanero hot wing that's absolutely amazing. So to figure out where you can find these yummy, yummy hot wings is go to their Facebook page, the Wing It Food Truck, and they post their weekly schedule there. That way, you can plan your entire week around where that truck is going to be. That's the Wing It Food Truck. If you haven't heard about it yet, the Independence Network's launch party happens 1 week from today, Saturday, October 7th. It's going to be a live 3-hour program. We're going to broadcast it live on the Independence Network. Also, we're going to live stream it on Facebook and several other places. It's going to be a fantastic show, and you definitely don't want to miss it. It is a ticketed event, so you have to have tickets if you want to go to the show. To go by yourself, it's $50. Or a better idea is to buy a VIP table. They're right up front, and you're going to be able to get up close and personal with all of our guests and all of the hosts of the Independence Network. Those tables are $500. It's a great deal. You should really go buy one. So, October 7th, Independence Network. Get your tickets now. Go to independencenetwork.us. One more time, the website is independencenetwork.us. And now, back to the program. There were a lot of passages in your book that struck me. But I want to read one of them to you and just have you explain it a little bit more because I think it's super important. So here it is, quote, "The immune system response in vaccinated people versus the response from those who gain natural immunity following a COVID infection was the same, except for one big difference. Vaccinated people did not receive the same B and T lymphocyte response as patients who just had natural immunity." Could you explain that?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. When you get COVID naturally, you're responding to the entirety of the vaccine. There's 27 proteins inside the capsium of the vaccine. Inside the capsium of COVID itself, inside the virus. So when you are getting COVID naturally, the spike protein is breaking through. It's fooling your body. It's entering your cells. It's all of a sudden it starts to replicate. It binds and it's making copies of copies of copies. However, the 27 proteins that are inside the virus, you are building memory cells to your B cells or your memory cells, your T cells or your helper cells. So the next time you catch COVID, your body is being fooled by the mutation in the spike protein, but you are not going to get as sick, theoretically, because you have memory to the majority of the virus. What causes different symptomology that we're noticing is the spike protein changes. Right now, we're getting we get people with different kind of sore throat. But back in Omicron, it was almost like a cold, and now we're getting traditional symptomology of what you would see in a common cold or a flu. That is what's causing the symptoms that you get. But when you get the vaccine, you're only getting memory to that spike protein. So once the virus mutates and the spike protein can fool your body, you are going to get COVID just like everybody else. You're going to get the same reaction, and you could theoretically get sicker from COVID from the more shots you've had. And there's a reason for that the spike protein is causing an inflammatory reaction inside your body. So if you've gotten 4 shots and you've gotten a small inflammatory reaction and then you catch COVID, if that portion of your body is weakened at that time, you could theoretically get sicker from taking all those vaccines.
Just logically, I know people that they got the Pfizer vaccine or Moderna or the J&J vaccine. As you correctly point out in the book, the J&J vaccine was a little bit different. I hear all these people say, well, I just got my second booster. I just got my third booster. I just got my fourth booster, or 27th or whatever the number is now. And the only thing that goes through my mind is, now, wait a minute. You got a shot that didn't really work. And then you went and got another shot that didn't really work. And now you're up to number 4. So what does this do to a person? I mean, a lot of people, they've got their fourth booster and then they got really sick. What was happening there?
Well, again, you're getting an inflammatory reaction from the shot. A lot of the issues that we see from those shots aren't the day of or the day after. They're 6 months, a year, 18 months later. What I talked about earlier, the myocarditis, the pericarditis, the abundance of cancers that we are seeing right now. Everyone is talking about this in healthcare, but you're not hearing about it on the news. I'm happy to talk about it on interviews because it's abundant right now. One of the cancers that we're seeing a lot of now is lymphoma, especially in young people, but it's numbers that you've never seen in your life before. And you wonder what we've been doing differently over the last couple of years. And really it's only the vaccines. You try to correlate that back to specific shots, whether it was the mRNA. And I talked to a doctor the other day and I let her know that I personally haven't seen many issues from the J&J, but she told me she's seen an abundance of cancers from the J&J shot. So why would I want to subject myself to a shot that, like you said, doesn't work? It's not going to prevent you from getting COVID. The narrative out there is that you will get less sick if you've had the COVID shot.
And that is so criminal.
It is. And that's another hypothesis I explored with my immunologist. And I said exactly what I said to you. If you had one and then another and then a booster and you got these inflammatory reactions, could you theoretically be sicker when you catch COVID? And he said, yes, from the cytokine storm. So again, why would I recommend that as an office? My practitioners didn't do it. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm a research doctor, but that's what I do. I take the numbers and I analyze them. I look at the numbers. I don't think medical doctors do that. They get their narrative from the CDC and they say, well, what does the CDC recommend? And that's kind of what they recommend in their office. It takes them a little while to catch up. Now, I might not be great at cardiology and immunology or, you know, things of that nature, but I'm pretty good at data and I can spot trends pretty easily. And it's not hard to disseminate that once you've looked at it for quite a while, to think that the folks that are doing the medical side of this would pick up on it, but it really didn't happen. I really blame the CDC for that because they just kept this narrative going no matter what information they had in front of them. Well, it's going on today. You're recommending boosters now, and there are people that are running out to get their five-year-old vaccinated again for something that, you know, they're going to catch anyway. It's really preposterous.
Well, I finished your book last week. I think it was probably on Thursday, but last night I was rereading the last couple chapters, getting ready for our interview, and I was watching my Texas Rangers finally win a game. Apparently, they can now play baseball again. But there was a commercial, and I want to play it for you and see if you catch the same thing.
Travis, did you know you can get this season's COVID-19 shot when you get your flu shot?
Two things at once!
First, it was a vaccine. Now it's a shot. What struck me is commercials you would see before that one, it would always be, get your COVID vaccine. And now you have a television commercial during Major League Baseball that just says it's the COVID shot. What's the difference between a shot and a vaccine?
Well, I mean, you know, theoretically they're the same if you look at the terminology, but the CDC changed the definition of the word vaccine in the last couple of years. So theoretically it matches what the definition is now because it says it helps reduce the possibility rather than prevent the possibility. But again, you know, when you tell somebody who's dealt with polio or Hep B or MMR all their lives, they hear that word vaccine and they think long-term immunity. So I think they're trying to fit the narrative of what and shut people like me up because I won't have a talking point at some point. But, you know, the bottom line is, look, I don't get a flu shot. Most of my patients don't get flu shots and they were rushing out to get 3, 4, 5 COVID shots. I said, well, why do you want this thing? It works just like a flu shot. If you're so against flu shots, your calculus really doesn't make sense when you come in here. But the media did an amazing job at towing the line of the CDC and the NIH. It's quite incredible. I just talked to Dr. Jancy Lindsay the other day. She became famous for giving testimony in front of the South Carolina Senate recently. And I gave her a call. She was gracious enough to call me back. We're going to collaborate a little bit on a follow-up here. And she had some scary things to say. I don't get into conspiracy theory in my book. I just present the data so that people can make up their own mind. And by the way, these are hard to do on audio only because people can't see the cover of the book. But a lot of people are buying this book just for the cover. It's a depiction of Fauci as Pinocchio with his nose coming through the mask. And a lot of people are buying this as a gift for their masked friend or the guy in the car who's always wearing the mask. It's a great Christmas gift. But the point of this book, and I didn't write it for me, I wrote it for you. I wrote it for you so that I didn't have to continue to, you know, keep telling you the story of how COVID works, of how masks work, about what we're seeing from the vaccines, the language of the virus. It's all in there, folks. This will give you the 30,000 foot overview, but I do not get into conspiracy theories. And I do that for a reason. This book is not political. This was to help people understand it in totality so they can feel safe, get back to life, and help mitigate this thing or any other virus for that matter moving forward. Dr. Jancy Lindsay had some really, really scary things to say when we talked the other day. When you look at how these commercials are being put out, you look at, Kelsey. It's quite amazing that they can, what's the old saying, David? You can fool some of the people some of the time, but not all the people all the time.
Yep.
I think they realize that, but they're still getting what they want from fooling some of the people some of the time. And it might take a while for the folks that don't have 100 IQ to catch up to us, but we were way ahead of these folks light years before them. And unfortunately, they vote. And now we're living under their rule of, you know, high taxes and inflation. But that's another conversation.
I happen to be one of those people that has a comorbidity. I'm a type 1 diabetic. And, you know, right when the vaccine came out, I got one of those letters in the mail. Congratulations, you're eligible for the vaccine. And, of course, I mentioned my dad, the scientist. He reaches over. He got up, walked across to the living room, grabbed that piece of paper out of my hand, and he starts reading through the ingredients. And it didn't take him long, a couple minutes, and he looked right up at me and he goes, "You're not taking this shot." And it just so happened that I had a doctor's appointment the very next day. And I just asked him, I said, "Okay, doc, what's up with the vaccine?" And he goes, "Well, I don't know much about it." And he said, "But you're a diabetic." And he said, "I know that there's going to be side effects." And he said, "So if you take it and you get side effects, you're probably coming to the hospital. If you don't take it and you get COVID, well, you're probably coming to the hospital." And he said, "So my advice, let's just wait and see what happens." And, you know, thank God I had a doctor that, you know, had some scruples about him and was honest with me. But I can tell you one thing that was fascinating, and I don't know if this came up in any of your testing data, but I did get COVID. And I was actually, I had traveled to Rawlins, which is a heck of a long ways away from where I live. And I was moderating a debate down there and rode down with a couple people. On the way back, one of the ladies that was with us, she was just hacking up a storm. And I thought, oh, crap, you know, if she's got COVID, I definitely have it. I get home. 2 minutes after she's home, she sends me a picture of an at-home test with a positive on it. And the message said, "My husband is on his way over there with some ivermectin." Now, I don't know if the ivermectin helped. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But really, as far as my symptoms go, I had a bad head cold for a couple days. And then on Wednesday, that would be 2 days after I got home, 3 days, I could not control my blood sugar. I mean, it was out of this world. Now, before I got COVID, I had my numbers down pat. I could tell you what 1 gram of carbs would do to my body. After COVID, those numbers are all screwed up. And this has been a year and a half, 2 years maybe, and they're still not in order. And I mean, it just blew my mind that there's a virus that would do this to numbers that were so precise the week before I had COVID.
Yeah, you know, we see a lot of anomalies from COVID is just as bad as a shot. You know, this thing is pretty nasty for some folks, depending on their immune system, I should say, at the time. And by the way, diabetics tend to do not great with lots of things. You know, it's not being
Tell me
having
about
diabetes
it.
Is well, I know you know personally, but you know that those are the ones we worry about. Those are the ones when we talked in the initially, we're like, well, if we had to recommend this thing, who would we recommend it to? But the narrative's changed a little bit. You know, I had a guy ask me the other day, and he said, "I have a heart issue," and I said, "Well, you're exactly the person I would not recommend it to for, you know, a multitude of reasons. I wouldn't recommend this shot to anyone." But those folks that said they had comorbidities, it's like it's even more concerning because it might flare that up. The issues we see with the shots now are things that you might have developed in your, you know, later in life, in your 70s, they're all of a sudden exhibiting themselves now in your 20s, 30s, 40s. They kind of speed up. They cause areas of inflammation. And when you do autopsies on these folks, that's exactly what you see. You see that the mitochondria of the cells is destroyed. It's fragmented. It's not smooth. And you see areas of inflammation in lots of parts of the body that it's not supposed to be there. That's what it's doing when it's not killing you. And if it hasn't, you know, done something to you, or COVID hasn't killed you, COVID is causing that exact same inflammation. I'm sure in time you'll start to hear this as studies come out. It'll probably take 5 years before we start hearing the data related to the vaccines. And I can't really explain why you're getting what you're getting. That we do see, though, microclotting, a lot of microclotting with these vaccines. And that might be something. By the way, COVID has something to do. It's the most common symptom of COVID is not a cough, a fever, or shortness of breath. It's a headache. And it has to do with hemoglobin uptake issues. And that might be what you're experiencing as far as your sugar. It might be something to do with your hemoglobin uptake. But that could be caused by the COVID itself, and it could be caused by the shot. So why would you compound that with either or? I mean, your best bet with COVID is to get in, get over it like everybody else. But and nobody wants it multiple times. By the way, I've had it 3 times that I know of. I just tested myself last week because I wasn't feeling so well, and it turned out I had a staph infection. It wasn't from wearing a mask, did you know I don't do that? But it wasn't COVID like everybody thought in the beginning. Everything was COVID. But I have had a multitude of people come back with COVID just in the last few weeks. We are getting a huge spike in numbers. And there's, I'd be happy to talk to you about how the government kind of made COVID go away. That's not in the book, but I've been discussing a lot on TV lately.
Let's do it.
So if you remember early on, there were those drive-through centers open. You had to have a symptom. Remember the signs, no symptoms, no tests. We had to have something called a medical necessity. And what would require a medical necessity? What would constitute that? It would either be a cough, a fever, or shortness of breath. So not a lot of people could get a COVID test legally. However, you saw the numbers kind of go up in the scale. And those numbers that you saw weren't the amount of COVID cases out there. Those were the amount of COVID cases we could catch up with. When the CARES Act got instituted, that allowed anyone in the country to get a COVID test at any time. You could walk into my office and say, I was exposed to someone who was exposed to someone who was exposed. I want to get a test. We would test you. Well, we found that everybody had this thing, and everybody, for the most part, was asymptomatic or mild. However, what that did to the numbers is it caused the numbers to go through the roof. So the government's got these numbers, and then television networks, the cable networks, have these huge numbers on TV. Oh my God, look at all the cases that are out there. Well, guess what happened after that? Two things, two major things. One, the rapid test came out. And when the government distributed 8 rapid tests to every single household, people stopped going to people like me who had to report the numbers by law. When my cases go to a lab, the lab has to report them. Therefore, they get reported. When you test at home, you are not calling the county saying, I am positive and I need to isolate. You're just testing and staying home. So the numbers then drop artificially. But when the CARES Act expired, we are right now in a position, we are exactly back to where we started. You have to have a symptom now to test. And my data tells you that 90% of patients who have this are asymptomatic or mild. So the 10% that are testing, most of them are getting home tests. And the 1 or 2 that trickle into my office and those numbers get reported, well, those numbers are virtually non-existent anymore. So therefore, the government made the numbers go away. It looks like the Biden administration just made COVID disappear. But most people don't like to get into the weeds because when you're explaining in politics, you know you're losing.
Well, it wouldn't be the only thing that Joe Biden has forgotten about. Oh, excuse me, made disappear. One of the last things you talk about in the book is the VAERS system. And I think that this is extraordinarily important. And I'll give you another anecdotal example. I have a couple friends down in Douglas, which is two and a half hours south of where I live. Both of them are nurses. And on 3 separate occasions, both of them told me, I mean, it's the same 3 people they're talking about. They gave them the shot, and within an hour, all 3 of them dropped dead. And it wasn't like 3 in succession. It was 3 different times. You point out very clearly in the back of the book that a lot of these things that are happening with the shot are not being reported to the VAERS system. So, 2 questions. One, what is the VAERS system for people that don't know? And 2, just talk to me about those non-reporting issues.
It's the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. That's what VAERS stands for. I will tell you that we've never reported anything to VAERS. I don't think my staff knows how to do it. No one's really trained on how to do that. And the bigger problem with reporting to VAERS is a lot of the folks, the doctors, that would be reporting some of these instances to VAERS are the very same doctors who were recommending the vaccine in the first place. These are the same folks, and I'm not bashing doctors here. There's a lot of good ones out there, but we learned that the majority of folks out there had no idea what they were doing. These are the same folks that shut their doors during COVID. They never did anything with testing. They don't understand the data that we have. They probably would never read the book. A lot of them have a God complex and never really want to, you know, relinquish that. And that's fine. But again, I don't do cardiology. I don't do cancer. We don't do oncology. I tell doctors, stay in your lane. I would never pretend to know what they do. And we refer those patients out every day. But the folks that would be reporting to VAERS, it's almost like a cognitive distortion. Well, it can't really be from the vaccine. And the stuff that we find most of the time is on an incidental finding. That's when you go to the doctor for something unrelated, and all of a sudden you find you have a heart issue, or you have a clogged artery, you have plaque in your aorta, or an enlarged right atrium, or something to that nature. And the doctor is not going to look at you and say, yeah, this is from the vaccine, because it's maybe 6 months later, but it's a year later. Cause and correlation are very big for me. When you see a multitude of the population that was vaccinated all of a sudden exhibiting symptoms of something else 6 months to a year later, you can make the determination that there is a trend here. And when you see a trend, it's obvious to people like us that, hey, there's got to be some cause and correlation. But the doctors have a little bit of a cognitive distortion, so they don't really want to report that to VAERS. Dr. Jancy Lindsay and I actually had a very extensive conversation on the VAERS system the other day, and she agreed with me that what you see in the VAERS system is a microcosm of what is out there. So if you see 30,000 deaths in the VAERS system, you may as well at least 10, 20, 25 times that. The way we report the COVID numbers was vastly different than the way we report adverse reactions from the vaccine. And to kind of highlight that point, Dr. Lindsay was throwing some charts at me the other day. In a 30-year period for stillborn births, okay, these are stillborns from pregnancies, terminate, well, I shouldn't say terminated, stillborns from pregnancies. In a 30-year period related to vaccines, they were about 25 every year, 25 or less. In 2021, there was 3,300, I believe, reported. And in 2022, there was like 1,600 reported. That's an anomaly that you cannot explain, but they were directly correlated to the vaccines. These were vaccine-induced stillborn births, or I should say deaths. So when you look at those numbers and you realize there's cause and correlation, you should have alarm bells go off. And that's just stuff that's being reported. So understand that this is a much larger problem. And for the government to not see that and to ignore that data that's right in front of their faces and then come out with another vaccine and expect the population to buy it is beyond me, man. We must have a population that just doesn't, they don't listen to shows like yours, and they just don't pay attention to common sense.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, we went from, you know, you could get hit by a bus, and if you had COVID, you died from COVID. And now we're at a place where, you know, we don't even correlate anything. It just blows my mind.
My favorite one, David, to end on a funny note, was it was a picture of a mosquito that landed to drink water, but he got his feet stuck in the honey. He tried to pull his feet out of the honey. He tripped backwards over a matchstick, hit his head on a rock, died of COVID. That was the caption on that.
Sounds about right. Well, Michael, I appreciate you taking the time to visit with me. The book is fabulous. It's called Fauci's Fiction. Yes, I'll put a picture of the cover on the website and make sure I put it out on my social media. If people want a copy, where do they go get it?
It's available everywhere. And just so you know, Amazon won't let me promote it due to what they're calling current events. And we do get banned and shadow banned. Yeah, very weird. But it's still doing well. It's because I do a million shows. But you can go to Amazon's probably the easiest place to get it. And please, if you get it, check it out. Leave a review. That all helps push the numbers up a little bit. And we're trying to get the truth out one person at a time. So I appreciate anybody who buys the book. And please, please share the information. It's very valuable. And yes, it could save your life.
Thank you very much, Michael. We'll be sure to have you back.
I'd love to anytime.
All right. Thanks. Have a good week, and don't miss Wednesday's program, where I'm going to replay the interview with Harriet Hageman. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns, at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.